Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of what we think is legitimate entertainment. Welcome to the Justice Revolution. I'm your host, James the Patriot. I have with me my ever so faithful co-host, Erica. We're going to excuse Nyssa today. Unfortunately, she had some other things that came up. Erica, say hello. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Oh, we're having such a fun time over here on the property. Yeah, we just finished our ram pump system, which is kind of a big deal because, like the way that we're setting up, this is all kind of coming together. I hope to just bore you for 30 seconds here.
No, I love it. I love it. I want to hear
one
it.
Of the very first organs that develops in the body, in the womb, is the heart. And so that's the first system that we created here on the property. The idea is that the body systems and permaculture design and even house systems, they all kind of reflect each other with the different, the different groupings of things. But so we created our heart first with the ram pump. We're able to capture water off of the spillway from our front pond. And it goes down this really long set of piping down to the ram pump through a series of clack valves and some plumbing parts that you can get for like $100 at the store. It then pumps all the water for free with no energy. It just perpetually will pump uphill where we store it in our water towers. And then the pressure from the water towers provides water for our buildings and for our gardens and for our animals. And then through the piping system, the vasculature system delivers all the nutrients to the tissues. So that we can have fresh flowing water constantly on the property. So that was like the first thing that we needed to do, and it got done and it's working. So that's like awesome. A huge deal.
So are you guys, are you starting to see signs of spring?
Oh yes. Praise the Lord. It's like, sorry, I got so excited.
Yeah, I know.
The purple dead nettle is in. That's always a really great sign. That's how like the true pioneers knew that spring was coming, because it's like one of the first edibles that comes up that's super medicinal and helps with allergies and stuff. So if you see purple little flowers everywhere, know that spring is definitely on its way.
Oh, that's so awesome. I know. Yeah. I'm just, we're out here in Utah. We're just so ready. I'm so ready for the warmth. I'm ready for spring. I'm ready to get outside and be outside more. And so yeah, we're ready. That's fantastic. I'm glad to hear that. That is actually pretty cool though, that you guys figured out a way to get water on a perpetual basis without using all of the modern, I don't know what you would call that stuff, the modern technology or machinery to do so.
Well, that's necessity is the mother of invention. I'm about to have a baby and I'm almost a half a century old. So I'm trying to work smarter and not harder with everything.
Oh gosh. When you say it like that, it sounds like you're someone straight out of the Bible having babies when they were 200 years old. I mean, come on.
It's pretty biblical as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
Oh my, that's crazy. Yeah. Diesel for we, the people, you know what? Just stop it. Okay. I know Texas hasn't even had a winter yet. Just stop it. You know what though? I do want to, speaking of Texas, I want to give a shout out to all of our brothers and sisters that have been affected by those horrible wildfires. I believe that was up in the Texas Panhandle area, maybe even parts of Oklahoma were affected. So we're thinking of you. We're praying for you. We love you. God bless you all. But yes, thank you everyone for joining. I apologize again for what has it been, almost 3 weeks since our last episode. You guys, bear with me if you don't mind. These last few months and the next couple of months are going to be crazy. I think I mentioned this before. My wife and I are building a new house. It's getting closer to being done, but I swear the closer it gets, the further away it seems like it's taking. Everything that can go wrong is going wrong. So we're trying to navigate those crazy waters. It's just been crazy stressful. I've been traveling quite a bit for my new job. I mean, thankfully, I travel much closer to home than what I was doing. So that's good. The struggle seems to be, though, is my new job. It's not a struggle, because don't get me wrong, I love it. I absolutely love it. It's very time consuming. It takes up a lot of my time. So I used to have more time during the day to be able to plan out the shows and to find topics to talk about on a weekly basis. It's been harder to do that. So bear with us. It might take 2 or 3 weeks before we get an episode put out, but I will get back onto a schedule. Once I'm in my new house and once that stuff settles down, we should be back on track for a weekly schedule. So with that, let's chat a little bit more about the title of the show. Did you see what the title of the show was, Erica?
Yes, I did.
What, you want to just shout that out for everybody?
Well, you're a taxpayer because I said so. Okay?
You're a taxpayer, dang it, just because I tell you you're a taxpayer.
Well, and what's really funny, I took it to a whole new level. The studying that I was doing on the property tax, mm-hmm. I have a friend that I'm working with on this too. And we're uncovering, like what I did was I combed through the entire section in our Indiana state constitution where it's talking about the property tax. And it is so unbelievably clear that it is not for us. Even nope. They even define taxpayer, right?
Yep.
I've got it pulled up here on my computer, but every single thing that they list as what a taxpayer is, it's like A, B, C, D, E, like a whole list of things. And not mm-hmm. a single one of them is us. It's all utility companies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm wondering if it's the same, like sort of equivalent, like how the tax assessors, they don't read the code, just like nurses and doctors don't read the manufacturer's description on the medications that they're giving. That mm-hmm. sort of thing. It's mm-hmm. kind of the equivalent, right? They only do the trainings that are given to them in their offices. That must be it. I don't know how mm-hmm. else to get away with it.
Well, here's what's interesting. Let me see if I can find a sample because that's not what I want. Sorry. I'm looking at this as we go. Let me go here to images. So, no, that's not it. So I was reviewing... okay, here we go. Let me see if I can pull this one up. Okay, I'm going to share my screen. Oh, you for stupid heck. Okay, I don't want to buy this document. I just want to look at it. Oh, I freaking
hate it. Must be on like Scribd or something.
Yeah, it's kind of, well, so I have an that's a good idea. I actually have a Scribd account. Let me open that while we're chatting here. So,
okay.
What I found is when you're purchasing property from somebody, right? So when you go into the closing table, let's say you're the buyer and there's the seller. The seller is going to they convey title through what is called typically a warranty deed or a special warranty deed. You're familiar with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me sign in to Scribd. You know what? Never mind. It's on my other. Geez, I've got like so many different tabs open. This is really hard sometimes to keep them all straight. So what I found, though, in looking at the warranty deed and how many of us actually studied this before we even signed it is my question.
No.
Special warranty deed. All right. Let me take a look at this here. Sorry, it's pulling up. Here's one here. Let's take a look at this one and see if this is the one. Okay. Yeah, this will do. This just gives us an idea of what it is. So let me share my screen. And for those of you who might be listening, I am going to talk through this. So let me share that. All right. So here's why is this still in the way? Maybe I need to scroll all the way down. There we go. Okay. Special warranty deed, right? You've seen something like this before, Erica?
I don't know if I've seen something exactly like this, but
it's pretty close, right? So typically what happens is the grantor would be the seller. And in this case, it's just this person, this Rothschild. Why has Rothschild sent the sample?
Because they're everywhere.
Anyway, it says this individual, a single person, for and in consideration of this amount of money, grants, bargains, sells, conveys, and specially warrants to the grantees. Okay, so there's a few things we have to be cognizant of. Do you know what the definition of the word convey is?
Not precisely, I wouldn't say.
So the general definition of the word convey means to give. But here's what's interesting. When you look at the legal definition of convey, here's what it says: to transfer title, ownership, to real property, or an interest in real property from one grantor to another by a written deed or an equivalent document such as a judgment of distribution which conveys real property from an estate. This is completed by recording the document with the county recorder or recorder of deeds. It only applies to real property. So how many times have you, and I'm getting off on a tangent here, but those of you who have purchased a home and used a mortgage to purchase said home, you're going to see documentation in your what's called a trust deed. That's what the bank uses to secure a lien on your property that says they can assign or sell or convey this trust deed to other people. By the legal definition, they are required, in order to grant whoever they're giving that to, they have to file a recorded document showing that. They never do. Ever. Okay. But let me get back to what I wanted to show you guys about this special warranty deed. Here's where the trap that we're all being sucked into. Can you see this section right here that I've highlighted?
Mm-hmm.
Can you read that for everybody?
Sure. Subject to existing taxes, assessments, liens, encumbrances, covenants, conditions, restrictions, rights of way, and easements of record, the grantor hereby covenants with the grantees that the grantor is lawfully seized in fee simple of the above granted premises and has good right to sell and convey the same. And that grantor, his heirs, executors, administrators shall warrant and defend the title against grantor's acts and none other unto the grantee, his heirs, and assigns against all lawful claims whatsoever.
Okay, so what was the first thing that stuck out to you when you read that? What was that first line right there?
Well, subject to existing taxes?
Yes.
Like, this is what was blowing my mind as I was reading all of this stuff, because the existing taxes, according to who the taxpayers are for these properties, are the utility companies.
Correct. But see, they're not being referred to that, right?
No.
So here's something else. Now, I looked at the special warranty deed that was conveyed to me when I purchased the home I'm in now. It doesn't go into this much detail, but it does say subject to existing property taxes. Wait a second. Was I informed that I have a right to own property free from government interference, including property taxes? Did anybody inform me of that before I signed on that dotted line? No. Who was it that created this document? Well, it was the title agent, the closing agent, sometimes referred to as the settlement agent. You guys have heard of that, right? Here's something else that's interesting in this particular special warranty deed. Grantor further declares that the documentary transfer tax is $1,200, which is computed based on the full value of the property. Oh my gosh, what is that? That is ad valorem property tax.
Right.
According to one's value. Right? So this is the world that we're living in. We have all been duped without even knowing it. So when we actually come up and stand up for our rights, this is what is being thrown back in our face. So here's what's interesting. I shared in our group, a while ago that the magistrate judge that was assigned to my case, who's just been sitting on his hands or doing something else more important than replying back to the stuff in our case, finally issued a ruling in my case. I posted it in our Telegram chat. You guys can all pull it up and see there. I'm going to go over that document because there's a number of inconsistencies that I want to point out. So real quick, Alexis Tudor has a question. What do you mean for utilities? Alexis, what that's referring to would be like your phone, your gas, your electricity, your water, things of that nature that are coming in from off your property that you're contracted with. So generally speaking, when I sell the property, like if I'm selling the home I'm in now and somebody else comes in, well, I don't want to still be paying for electricity and water and gas or anything else. I don't live in that property anymore. So I need to convey those rights to the new seller. That's typically what that refers to. Now, I would actually spell it out. I wouldn't say subject to existing taxes. I would say subject to existing utilities, namely gas, electric, water, so on and so forth.
I actually have, someone was asking about the Indiana Constitution sections that I'm talking about. I can share my screen if you want to see.
Yeah, pull it up.
What I've got here.
Let's pull it up. Let's go over it.
This is just, it's just unbelievable here. How do I do this? Let's see.
So on the very bottom, there's a...
Select a tab to share.
Yep.
Can you see it?
Not yet. You got to hit the select the tab and then hit share. There's a button down at the bottom of that box that says hit share.
I'm challenged here, guys. we need Nyssa immediately. We need justice. Where are you?
Nyssa, where are you? So you click on, on the bottom of the screen where it says present, and there's a little computer screen with a plus sign. You click on that. Then you're going to click on the one that says share screen.
Okay.
And then that'll bring up a box and it'll say.
Okay. All right. Yep, I think I got it, guys.
You got it. Yep. Perfect.
All right. So it actually even labels the chapter as an obvious giveaway. This is who the property taxes are for. Look at this. Mm-hmm. It says, these are how the taxpayer is defined. Okay. Now this is the link that it took me to when I was in the section previously that said what a taxpayer is. It says that this definition of this section is from this section. So then you hyperlink it and then this is what it brings it up. So look at this. This is, you know, transport, selling, steam, electricity, gas, water, general, airwaves, sewage system, sewage treatment plant, bridge companies, bus companies, express, light, heat, railroad, right?
Yeah.
There's this whole, here's some who are not subject to taxation under this chapter, aviation, broadcasting, television, and water. And then it talks about, in a municipality or corporation held in trust by a first-class city. Okay. Mm-hmm. Still not us. None of it so far. Mm-hmm. Or a taxpayer that is described. See, this is how they jump you all over the place.
Yep.
And then I looked up every single thing too. I was like, okay, what a definite citus property. So I looked that up and I even looked up in Black's Law Dictionary. I was looking up every single definition of everything, real property, personal property, whatever. Personal property is just considered like improvements from whatever existed after the utilities guys put on their stuff. And it doesn't include our homes.
No.
And then it's also, okay, so a taxpayer that metering program that files a personal property tax return for the property with the county assessor. The utilities companies do that. We don't do that. And then property tax recodification citations, because this is just, to me, it's just a misapplication of a misrepresentation, I should say, for people who don't read it and who don't know like what the codes are actually saying, because when you read through the entire thing in total, you realize it is totally legal what they are doing, because they can only make rules the rights for the people are completely reserved. Our rights for life, liberty, property, happiness. They're not allowed to legislate on those at all, but they are allowed to legislate for these corporations and companies. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is for, but they're using it to apply it to us.
So, Here's how bass ackwards we have become. And this isn't just happening. This isn't just something that's happened over the last few years. Mind you, this has been going on for, I would dare say, half a century, if not longer. Longer than that. Maybe longer than that now. Probably close to a century. Right?
Yeah.
What has happened is the Constitution puts strict limitations on what Congress can or cannot do. Right. I mean, it's a contract. The Constitution, the federal and your state, is a binding contract because every public servant is required to swear an oath to it. Which also, mind you, since we the people are the beneficiaries of that contract, we actually can use that contract and sue them for breach of contract, right? So that's what we're doing in these causes of action. But let me back up. The state has complete and total control to regulate and legislate into the ground, if they want to, anything that is a creation of the state. That's where it is. Did you see this recently? Or maybe, I don't know, I saw a snippet of it on Telegram. There was some brainwashed news anchor that was calling all of these people who were supporting a particular candidate. Guys, I'm not getting into the politics of who we support, who we don't support. That's not what the show's about. But these people who supported a particular candidate that was pushing kind of the America First agenda, you guys can put two and two together. This particular news anchor was so delusional to go as far as to call these people who believe, and I'm quoting, that their rights come from God and not from the government. That's what this person stated. Mm-hmm. And that in her mind, these people are domestic terrorists, the sovereign citizen type, right? We've all been labeled that at one point in time or another. We are all so delusional as to think, nay, I would say have the audacity to believe that our rights do not come from the government, the almighty government, that our rights come from our creator. Isn't that what the founding fathers believed? Didn't they write that into a piece of paper? Oh, that's right. The freaking Declaration of Independence. Are we so lost that we cannot even see that the sky is blue when it's not rainy or cloudy outside? Are we that freaking lost?
Well, it is very easy to get lost in the forest or to get lost in the trees and miss the entire forest.
Exactly.
Like, I think that a lot of where we've gone wrong in all this pursuit of liberty and justice is that we've been focusing on all of the fine little details of the statutory whatevers, the rules of procedure for the legislative tribunal courtrooms and all the techniques and the ways that we can write our motions. But we're not stepping back and realizing, wait a second, like there's a fundamental law in this. They're not even supposed to be able to do this in the first place. It's considered null and void. If they're acting outside of what was granted to them by the people to be able to do, then whatever they decide in that spirit is considered null and void.
Yeah. So this
but is they'll still come and take your home. So that's what we have.
Yep. They'll still come and take it. There has been so many different theories out there. How do I get myself into the private, get myself out of the public and into the private and all of these things? And I'm here to tell you, you guys, just turn on the news. Look at anything that you find on social media of an interaction with an everyday upstanding citizen with law enforcement. And just see how well that works when they say, I'm in the private. These people don't care.
No.
These courts, and when I say courts, I'm saying all-encompassing. These courts, these judges, these lawyers, these liars, as I call them, they have all been swimming in the statutory sea for so long, they wouldn't know a constitutional right if it slapped them in the face. Here's something interesting. I was listening to a podcast a while ago, completely unrelated to what we're talking about today. But what was interesting is the gentleman that was in the podcast was talking about how he had a good friend of his who studied constitutional law. So let me ask you, Erica, if you're an attorney that studied constitutional law, do you think that maybe you would study, I don't know, the frickin' Constitution?
Yes, I think you should in a class called constitutional law.
Yeah, no, they don't study the Constitution. What do you think they study instead? In a constitutional law course, what do you think they're studying?
How to keep the constitutions out of the courtroom?
Basically,
be my guess, because that's what they do. That's what they say, that this is there's no place for the constitutions in these courtrooms.
Exactly.
How do you take back a court system that doesn't use the fundamental law that you're
that created
basing,
it.
Yes, that you're basing every single thing from that point forward on. Your entire argument is dependent on accepting the Constitution. So
here, so what was, I mean, this isn't anything new to those of us that have been doing, you know, and when I say doing this, I mean truly understanding the supreme law of the land, which is the Constitution, and any laws and treaties that are made in pursuance thereof. This is the Supremacy Clause, Article 6, Clause 2, I believe. The Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution. Any law to the contrary, notwithstanding. So what that means, and what that has been interpreted to mean, is that if there's any law that is passed that is trying to abrogate any of the rights that we the people retain, that law is in effect null and void in its application against we the people. Okay? So here's what's fascinating about this constitutional law student. They didn't study the Constitution. They didn't look at the plain language of the Constitution itself. No, they studied case law. They studied decisions from courts. And they didn't just study decisions from the Supreme Court, which is, you know, that's it. The buck stops there, right? We talked about this in some of our past episodes on the rules for the pro se. You know, when the Supreme Court says this is how it is, then this is how it is. And if we don't like it, we have to work our way to change that. But the problem is, even people like this magistrate judge. So I have up on the screen, for those of you who are watching, I have the judge's order on the motion to dismiss that was filed by the defendants in my case. He says in no uncertain terms, and you're going to see how he contradicts himself in this particular order. And this judge is begging to be overturned on appeal. He's begging for it. Basically, he's saying, because you're a pro se, I dare you, right? Because out of one side of their mouth, they say one thing and they do something completely different out of the other, right? So here's what he said. The matter before the court is a motion to dismiss filed by the defendants under Rule 12b1. Rule 12b1 is for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, or alternatively under Rule 12b6, which is failure to state a claim. Plaintiff, who is proceeding pro se, moves the court for leave to amend the complaint and to expedite these proceedings. For the reasons discussed herein, the court will grant the defendant's motion to dismiss, deny the motion to amend, and deem moot the motion to expedite the proceedings. Okay, just in that that little paragraph, this guy shot himself in the foot, because you cannot deny my motion to amend, because I have one chance. I get one freebie. I can amend any complaint at any time, as long as I've not done it before, and I don't need the court's permission to do it. So he just shot himself in the foot right there. Okay, setting that aside, if you notice as we go through this, there's all these footnote markings. You see these here?
Yep.
So on this chapter, or that's not chapter, this paragraph heading that says background, there is a footnote. And at that footnote, it says, unless otherwise noted, the facts in this order are taken from the plaintiff's complaint and are presumed true for the purposes of this order. Keep that in the back of your mind. All right. So in the background, he says, plaintiff owns property in Weber County, where I live. All right. So that's true. Defendants are the county, its agencies, and individuals that work in certain positions, such as the county assessor and county treasurer. Defendants, each in his or its role, assessed an ad valorem property tax against plaintiff's property in Weber County, placed it on the tax roll, notified plaintiff of the taxes owed, and attempted to collect the taxes owed. So that was actually taken. There's another little footnote. This ECF number 20, page 3, that was their motion to dismiss. So they are on the record of stating, this is what we did, and he took it from that. Plaintiff alleges defendants are violating his constitutional rights. Uh-oh. Hey, Erica, do we have constitutional rights?
I mean, I kind of feel like I do, but probably not in this court. I don't think you do. I don't know. Well,
let me stop you right there. What have I said?
We have constitutionally protected rights.
Bingo.
But we don't have constitutional rights because they don't give them to us.
Exactly. God gives them to us. So this is how you know you're dealing with an activist on the bench. Wait a minute. This guy came into my court thinking that he has rights that come from somewhere else other than a piece of paper that's 260 something years old. Get out of here. No. No, judge. I don't have constitutional rights. A piece of paper does not grant me my rights and or privileges. My creator gave those to me. And we live in a constitutional republic that was designed to protect individual liberties and rights. And it is being usurped every single day by people like you who put on a black robe and pretend to put on a legal proceeding when in fact it is a simulation of legal proceedings. Okay, let's move on. Defendants are violating his constitutional rights under both the United States Constitution and the Utah Constitution by assessing the ad valorem property tax. According to plaintiff, okay, remember, what did he say? All of the facts in this order are taken from his complaint and presumed true. According to plaintiff, this is an attempt to deprive him of money and or his property, which is not taxable by the law of the land, while lacking all appearance of due process and the rule of law, and are doing so under color of authority, statute, regulation, practice, custom, policy, and usage of state revenue codes.
That sums it up.
Sums it up. That's exactly what they're doing. He then says, I seek injunctive relief and 209, blah, 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 blah. Mr. Tracy claims deprivation of protected rights under color of law, conspiracy to interfere with protected rights, and deprivation of property rights. Jurisdiction is allegedly proper before this court under the 7th Amendment to United States Constitution and 28 U.S.C. 1331. That is the injunctive act, because there isn't a common law cause of action under the injunction. Because this action arises under violations of the 4th, 5th, and 14th Amendments and 22 of the Utah Constitution. Okay, so anything wrong with any of that there, that you, the, other than this idiot saying I have constitutional rights?
I mean, it seems like a fair representation of what you were alleging, right? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So
it's a good summary.
Standards of review. All right. So now we get into the good stuff. This is what they're supposed to do. And he put this in here as a CYA or CHA, cover his, you know what. Pro se filings. The court is to construe pro se litigants' pleadings liberally and hold them to a less stringent standard than formal pleadings drafted by lawyers. And then he cites some cases here. A liberal reading of plaintiff's complaint, however, does not relieve the plaintiff of the burden of alleging sufficient facts on which a recognized legal claim can be based. Accordingly, it is not the proper function of a court to supply additional factual allegations to round out the plaintiff's complaint or construct a legal theory on the plaintiff's behalf, and the court may not assume the role of advocate for plaintiff or any other pro se litigant. Okay, fine. I don't want you to. I don't need you to. I put everything in my complaint that needs to be there. So, let's talk about the motion to dismiss. He says, defendants move to dismiss under 12b1 for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. A motion to dismiss under Rule 12b1 can take one of two forms: a facial attack, challenging the sufficiency of the complaint, requiring the district court, okay, remember that, requiring the district court to accept the allegations in the complaint as true, or two, factual attack, challenging the facts upon which subject matter jurisdiction depends. If they do that, number two, they're required to submit evidence in support of it. They didn't. Okay. The burden of establishing subject matter jurisdiction is on the party asserting jurisdiction, which is what I did. A court is required to convert a Rule 12b1 motion into a Rule 12b6 or a Rule 56 summary judgment motion when resolution of the jurisdictional question is intertwined with the merits of the case. Again, He put that in there to CHA, cover his you-know-what. Defendants argue the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction under the Tax Injunction Act. Considering the four corners of the complaint, therefore, defendant's motion is a facial attack, right? So he says they're challenging what you put in your complaint. It's a facial attack. With facial attacks, the court applies the same standards that are applicable to a 12B1 motion for failure to state a cause of action. In considering this, all well-pleaded factual allegations are accepted as true and viewed in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. To survive dismissal, a plaintiff must plead both a viable legal theory and provide enough allegations of fact taken as true to state a claim to relief that is plausible on its face. Plaintiff's reliance upon labels and conclusions or a formulaic resuscitation of the elements of a cause of action will not suffice. That came from Iqbal versus Twombly, which is down here. You can see that. I didn't do any of that. You can kiss my you-know-what, Mr. Judge. Further, determining whether a complaint states a plausible claim for relief will be a context-specific task that requires the reviewing court to draw on its judicial experience and common sense. Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I'm going to get through this, Erica. My head is really starting to hurt.
I hear you.
All right. I'm not going to go over everything. Like here it says motion to amend. I'm not going to go over that. Let's get into the discussion. He says that the defendants moved to dismiss under 12B1 for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. They argue the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction under the Tax Injunction Act, 28 U.S.C. 1341. As noted above, this is a facial attack on plaintiff's complaint. Okay, so if it's a facial attack, the court must accept everything in the complaint as what, Erica? True. Has to be accepted as true. Okay. The Tax Injunction Act provides that district courts shall not enjoin, suspend, or restrain the assessment, levy, or collection of any tax under state law where a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy may be had in the courts of such state. The TIA was enacted to limit federal court jurisdiction over state tax cases and to bar jurisdiction when federal court action would reduce state tax revenue. So that state taxpayers, state taxpayers could not seek federal court orders to avoid paying state taxes. The Supreme Court has held that the TIA was a remedy tailor-made for, taxpayers, that the TIA only applies in cases in which taxpayers, are we seeing a theme here yet?
Yeah.
Seek federal court orders, enabling them to avoid paying state taxes. Okay, here's the problem. I'm not seeking to avoid paying any tax. If I am lawfully required to pay the tax, I'm going to pay the tax.
Right. That's the exact point here.
But guess what? As one of the sovereign people of my state, I have a right to acquire, possess, and protect property. That right cannot be taxed. In fact, I am immune to a taxation. So I'm not avoiding anything. Anyway, moving on. And that the TIA does not apply to third-party claims that would enlarge state receipts, blah, blah, blah. He says, the facts of this case fit squarely within the reasoning of Hibbs and its progeny in applying and interpreting the TIA. Hibbs. Okay, so he's got another footnote here.
Using case law.
31. All right, let's see fin 30 right here. It says Fibbs. This is what it says under that doctrine, which came out of, it looks like the... This might have been a Supreme Court case. Yeah. It says Congress was thinking of cases where taxpayers were repeatedly using the federal courts to raise questions of state or federal law going to the validity of the particular taxes imposed upon them. After Hibbs, therefore, the TIA reaches cases only in which state taxpayers seek federal court orders enabling them to avoid paying state taxes or where the taxpayer intends to frustrate the collection of state tax revenue. All right. Again, Are we seeing a theme here yet? Yes, you're a sir. Taxpayer because I said so. So going back up here, he says this fits squarely within HIPS. Plaintiff is using this court to raise questions of state or federal law questioning the validity of certain taxes, in this instance, an ad valorem tax. No, I am not. The ad valorem property tax is 100% constitutional and valid when it is applied appropriately.
Correct. Therein lies the problem.
That is, and so we're going to go into this right here. Plaintiff's attempts to overcome the TIA subject matter jurisdictions restrictions along with Hobbs and its progeny fail. Okay, why? He just says they fail. Doesn't say why, just says they fail. Mr. Tracy goes to great length to arguing the tax on his property is a commercial tax. No nexus between his property and commercial activity exists, and he is not a taxpayer as asserted by defendants. These arguments fail. He doesn't say why. Just says they fail. So, in a court of record, the judge is supposed to be an independent trier of the facts. And they're supposed to issue what's called a findings of facts and conclusions of law. In his memorandum and order, he is supposed to point to substantial evidence to substantiate his conclusions. Did he say anywhere where it was proven that I'm not a taxpayer?
No.
But wait a minute. He just said back at the very beginning that everything was taken from my complaint in this order is considered true unless stated otherwise.
Yeah, he's not saying that you are not a taxpayer like you claimed.
He just says these arguments are.
Right.
You know what? I can tell you that you've got a big freaking head. Guess what? That's just my opinion. That doesn't mean that you actually have a big freaking head in relatively comparison to other people. Maybe you do. I don't know. This guy's a judge. He's a judge. He's a freaking egotistical maniac. And I don't have a problem saying this. You are my public servant, you freaking moron. Do your dang job. Alleging facts, not an evidence. So my dog Rex, you're getting ahead of me because I plan on doing that exact same thing in my appeal. Okay. Yep. Ambiguity. This is ambiguity. Here's how he says, here's how he's justifying that my arguments fail. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 of the United States Constitution refers to the congressional taxing power and is inapplicable to state property taxes. Okay, I can agree with that. Mm-hmm. Similarly, citations to cases involving a corporation tax are inapplicable. Okay, so he says 32, see Flint v. Stone Tracy. Guess what? I quoted that Flint v. Stone Tracy in my complaint. And I used it in the context it's supposed to be used. Is that a finding of fact? I mean, you're trying not to laugh, Erica. This
I just feel like there's something super sneaky going on. There's some element that we're missing that
what would happen? What would happen to this overall system that we've got going on out here, that if this guy was to rule in my favor, if the Court of Appeals was to rule in my favor, what would happen?
Well, then it would be applicable to all of us, right?
You want to talk about something that would bring the entire system down? This is it. How much money is stolen, and I say stolen because that's what this is. How much money is stolen from everyday good men and women who just want to live their lives and be left alone? How much money is stolen from them every single year under the guise of a legitimate tax?
Right.
So I stated in my complaint multiple times. He says here that arguing that the tax on his property is a commercial tax and no nexus between his property and commercial activity exists, because it doesn't.
No.
And guess what the Utah State Supreme Court said? Because the provision that they're using to tax me and my property is a provision in the Utah Constitution. Guess what the Utah State Supreme Court said? There must be a substantial or tangible nexus between the entity seeking to impose a tax and the thing or corporation that they're trying to tax. What does tangible mean, Erica?
So you can touch it.
Something that you can touch and feel. Like I'm holding my cell phone right now. This is a tangible piece of property. I can touch it. So just because I'm holding this cell phone, does that give the county the authority to tax me or property tax my cell phone? Because under that argument, everything that we touch should be a property tax. But they're only taxing our homes and our land. Does this make sense to anybody?
Well, and I'm not even sure that I feel like that I always go back to this. I feel like that they're not taxing our home or our property, because if they were, they would have to follow the rules about direct taxes and indirect taxes, right? Direct taxes have to be according to the census and according, you know, apportioned and for a specific amount of time, for a specific reason. If it's an indirect tax, it has to be uniformly applied.
Mm-hmm.
So it must be that they're assessing the tax based on the utilization of the recordation of the property.
That's what it was designed to do. If I start a business and I incorporate my business under the statutes and laws of the state, now that business is a creation of the state can tax and do whatever the heck they want to it. The idea behind the property tax was, hey, we have all these massive corporations that have property all over the place and we're not seeing any taxation revenue from it. This is what this is designed to do. It was never designed. I mean, does it make sense to anyone that my public servants, quote unquote, can make me homeless if I don't pay my taxes? Does that make sense to anyone?
Seems like the exact opposite of why we granted them power to protect our rights.
It is. This is the usurpation of power that we're talking about. Read the Declaration of Independence. What was going on then is going on now. I would dare say it's going on tenfold now. But nobody is doing anything about it because we're just going along to get along.
Right. So, it's an extortion fee. That's what I call it. Like we're
that's
just
exactly what it is.
Paying them to not kick us out of our own houses.
Exactly what it is. So here's what he rounds out this argument or whatever he says, this discussion. He says plaintiff's litany of numerous other cases and common law principles also failed to persuade the court that it has jurisdiction. Okay. Why? You have provided no reasoning behind your decisions. You just made a decision and said, this is my decision. And it's like those of us as parents. Soon to be Erica here, a mama again. When your little child gets to that age, you say, nope, we're not doing that because mama said so. You don't question it. That's what this guy is treating me like. Instead of treating me as a fellow citizen of this republic, instead of treating me as someone whose rights have been violated and has an aggrieved pleading to bring to the court, one where I'm seeking justice, he's just said, no, I'm the big bad judge and this is the way it's going to happen just because I said so. It's like Alexis is saying here in the chat, common law to them seems like fiction. It's because it is, Alexis. We just talked about this. They wouldn't know common law if it slapped them in the freaking face, even though the entire statutory system is built on common law. Again, Diesel for We the People, spot on. Again, absolute vague and ambiguous. Absolutely. So he goes on to finish this out. Says the jurisdiction of federal courts is limited. Well, duh. Thank you for stating that fact, Captain Obvious. There is a presumption against our jurisdiction and the party invoking federal jurisdiction bears the burden of proof. I already gave it. The court finds plaintiff has failed to meet that burden, notwithstanding plaintiff's attempts to do so. Thus, the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction and the case must be dismissed. I would agree with you if you really did lack subject matter jurisdiction, but you don't. See, what's happening here is These courts are treating our cases like they are tax cases. These are not tax cases. These are constitutionally rights, constitutionally protected rights cases. Has nothing to do with taxes whatsoever. Not only that, you sir, said that everything in my complaint is taken for true for the purposes of your order, where you state that I said that I'm not a taxpayer. Well, then that must be true. So if I'm not a taxpayer, explain to me how the revenue laws apply to a non-taxpayer. Did you notice, Erica, anywhere in that order, did he cite anything from the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals that stated as such? Did you see that anywhere?
I didn't see it, no.
Do you want to know why?
What's that?
There is and I put this in my complaint, there is a decision from the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, which is directly where I appeal to. It was issued in 1946 or 49, I believe. Adler versus Nichols. The judges in that case stated, and I'm quoting, "It is equally well established or equally well settled that the revenue laws relate only to dun, 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 taxpayers, and that there is no remedy prescribed in law for non-taxpayers seeking to recover funds taken from them that the entity was trying to impose on someone else." So what's happening here is we have our state and county governments are seeking to impose a property tax, which is lawful to be imposed on a corporation or a creature of the state. They're seeking to impose that on people who are not a corporation and who are not creatures of the state.
So why can't we write notices to the people who are sending this out, the Indiana State Department of Revenue, the tax assessors, and ask them for proof that they have the authority to send these taxes to us, the non-taxpayers?
So I did that. Alexis, it's Adler, A-D-L-E-R, versus Nichols. So I did that. Prior to initiating my complaint, I submitted records requests. I said, send me everything that you have that proves I have a nexus with the county. Because the state, my state Supreme Court says there has to be a tangible nexus. Okay, so what's that tangible nexus? Where's the paperwork that shows I was incorporated? Where is that? And they provided me with nothing because it doesn't exist. Okay. They didn't even go as far as to use a warranty deed like I showed you guys, where it says, hey, we're agreeing to be subject to all of these things. They didn't even bother to bring that in to defend their cases.
So I'm wondering if the notice then can include, as our public servants, as we're instructing them, mm-hmm. can it include some teeth about, like, if you don't provide this, it means that you don't have it. And I'm going to assume that this tax bill is not for me and I'm not going to pay it unless you rebut it and show me.
You can absolutely do that. But again, do criminals follow the law?
This is always what it goes back to, is the enforcement.
What does Brent Johnson say? Because they're criminals and they don't follow the law.
Right. But that's where the importance of the reinstituting of the grand juries and the constitutional county loving.
Yep.
The militia.
Civics. We've talked about that before.
People need to have the enforcement hand against because we're expecting the criminals to deliver us justice.
Yeah. It's just not going to happen.
It's going to have to go to that next level. Mm-hmm. I would love to be able to solve all this stuff with the pens, but for some reason, no one's getting justice in these court systems. And the idea is we've got to take them back. I don't think they're acting in a way that, for whatever reason, the state nationals will tell you it's because we're not coming in our right status, standing in jurisdiction.
No, that's
or not it'll it. Tell you that the Organic Act of 1871 is the reason.
Yeah, that's also.
But there's something, there's some reason that they don't care about the Constitution and they don't care about our protected rights not being thrown into these taxes.
So what's happened is these people have, when I say these people, I'm saying people in government that are enforcing these enforcing these constitutional laws unconstitutionally against the people that they're supposed to serve. These people have gotten a small little bit of power. And boy, does that go to your head, right, Erica? You get a little bit of power. Oh my, what happened during COVID and all those COVIDiots, right?
Right.
Every single, oh my gosh, I had never seen so many people on a power trip. Boy, they sure loved it. Telling people what to do, when to do it. You will do what I say. And if you don't, I'm going to kick you out of here. Do you know how many people I saw removed from planes?
I was about one of them. That's where one of my biggest ones happened.
Yeah.
The guy was like, you realize you can't wear your mask that way. And I was like, I'm going to punch you in the face, but I didn't.
Good for you.
I almost did.
Trained. You were staring. You were.
I had places to be. So
this is why I'm saying is we're living in it's upside down world. Like my good buddy Sean from SGT Report says, it's upside down world, and we're living in it, and we don't know which way is up or down or left or right. So again, what do we expect is going to happen? So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to appeal this decision. It's highly unlikely I'm going to get a favorable ruling from even the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. I'm going to throw it right back in their face. Now, do you remember from our episodes of the 19 rules a pro se must follow? One of the first, I think it was 4th or 5th rule, was you must create a major federal question. One that hasn't been previously tackled before or answered before by the United States Supreme Court. You remember that, Erica?
Yep, I do.
Okay. So when I submit my appeal, I'm going to create the major federal question that is obviously duh, but it's not being followed. And it's as simple as this. The questions being presented before this court are, number one, does one of the people of Utah have a right to acquire, possess, and protect property free from unlawful governmental interference, as is enumerated under the Utah Constitution, Article 1, Section 2. Well, that should be it's right there. Okay. If that is true, then did the district court err in dismissing my complaint when I brought lawful claims before the court stating that these defendants were attempting to deprive me of my property without due process of law that is not taxable by the law of the land because, and I quote, I have a right to acquire, possess, and protect property, and no state may convert a right into a privilege and charge a license and a fee for it. Murdoch versus Pennsylvania from the United States Supreme Court. So when we put these types of questions before these panels of judges, this is public record. Anybody can see it. They're probably going to find some way to wiggle out of it. Again, we go into these situations expecting the worst, but hoping for the best. So I fully expect. Now here's the other problem. I'm not going to get an answer or a ruling on my appeal for another 9 months. That's how long it takes on average, 9 months before you're going to get a ruling on your appeal. Now I ask you, is that a speedy and just remedy?
You might be foreclosed on by then. If
you very well could have been foreclosed on and kicked out of your house.
And the amount of interest that builds up, like there's got to be some sort. I think it's going to come to bones, James.
I think you're right.
I think it's going to come to bones.
Yeah.
And they don't want that to happen because office wieners versus farm boys.
I would put my money on the farm boys 999.997% of the time.
Yeah.
So a part of me is like, okay, with everything I've got going on in my life right now, do I want to take on this fight? And another part of me is like, if not me, then who? If I'm not willing to stand up and fight for the rights of my brothers and sisters because they're unwilling or too stupid to do it, and I'm not saying people are stupid, you know what I mean. If they're unwilling because they don't know how, they don't know, they can't articulate, whatever the case may be. If I'm not willing to stand up and fight for them and be that individual, then who is? You know, I saw an interesting quote from Mark Twain. Mark Twain's an interesting guy, would you say?
I'd say.
He said that it's easy for people to be patriots when everybody who was standing up to do the right thing was persecuted and hated and cheated, and then they come to find out they were right all along. It's easy to be a patriot then. But what about those of us in the minority? Again, we know how the founding of our nation, less than 3% of the population at the time, less than 3%. And they were successful in establishing a new nation, one that was founded upon life, liberty, and happiness. Are we seeing that still today? Oh, they say you are. As long as you pay your registration fee on your car every year, we'll leave you alone. Oh, and as long as you obey every single little minutia rule of the road, we'll leave you alone. Oh, don't even think about parking there. If you park there, you have to pay. And if you don't, then we're going to slap you with a ticket. And if you don't pay the ticket, then we're going to impound your car. We're going to throw you in jail. Does this sound like what the founders envisioned?
No, not even a little bit.
No. I'm standing on my soapbox for a second here, guys. So much has happened. I'm done. I'm just so done with all of it. I just want to live out my little slice of heaven. Leave me the frick alone. What have I ever done to you?
What, it's why one of our unalienable rights, actually.
Why do you keep coming into my property and bothering me with your claims and your issues and then stating that you have a right to do so? Yeah, by what authority? Like you mentioned earlier, Erica, by what authority? Point out to where did we the people exactly give you the power to do what you're doing to me? Because we didn't. And this is what I've said before. They get around all of this stuff because they're not looking at this from a constitutional law perspective. They're looking at this from a contractual basis perspective. Oh, well, you agreed to allow us to tax you. Oh, you agreed to abide by the rules of the road when you went out and got a driver's license. You agreed that we could tax you when you paid your registration, because if you didn't pay your registration, then we were going to pull you over, impound your car, and heaven forbid if you have a firearm on yourself, we might actually just kill you. Does that sound like the land of the free and home of the brave to you?
It sounds like there was some amount of trickery performed that we're supposed to figure out where it happened and be the ones to amend it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
That's why this is like the key that the state nationals say is missing is this idea that they changed the rules on us and we didn't catch it.
Yeah.
And so now we have the duty to catch it.
The struggle I run into with the whole state national argument. There's no such thing as a state national. There's nowhere can I find in the Constitution where it says we're state nationals. I can't see that. I mean, because it just doesn't make sense to me. Wait a minute. I know who I am. I know where I stand.
But when it comes to the contractual nexus argument, is there somewhere that they have, like, even maybe just labeling yourself as plaintiff on the forms, does that act alone?
No, like, it doesn't. Trigger. Again, like we talked about before, it's these lawyers and these judges have been swimming in the statutory sea that they believe whatever comes out of the congressional session in every state and the federal congressional district every single freaking day, darn near, it is gospel law. Oh, those 400 something idiots put their name on it. They all voted. That's the true definition of a democracy where the majority rules. In a democracy, individuals do not have rights. That's the true. So our nation is functioning more like a democracy than it is as a constitutional republic. I mean, just listen to it, right? Like, here in Utah, my state just finished their legislative session. What does the news do? Oh, the lawmakers passed this law, and the lawmakers passed this law, and the governor signed this into law, and now this is the law of the land. I mean, it doesn't matter if any of those particular laws, quote unquote, I'm using that term loosely. It doesn't matter if any of those laws violate any of our God-given rights. And never mind the fact that we, the people, did not grant them, those people, the authority to make that law to begin with. But does anybody fight it? No, because what has the Supreme Court said? The Supreme Court has said we presume all laws to be constitutional until challenged otherwise. Do we see the problem here, people?
Well, it's easy to pick off one or two of us, maybe 10 of us.
Maybe a couple hundred of us.
Like the our public servants, they need to fear us.
Yeah.
We don't need to be fearing them. And it's not going to happen. You know, if I say to my kids, I'm going to put you in timeout.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot different than daddy saying, I'm going to beat your fanny. You better, you know, there's a big difference between those two approaches on the result you get.
So there's a couple of thoughts that have crossed my mind that I've been thinking about. And I've been invited to go on the Legal Beagles channel. Have you guys heard about that? The Legal Beagles. It's with my buddy Brandon, Gary Brown, and then sometimes Alphonse is on there. So one of the things that has crossed my mind is I remember, and this is before I even started this, when I was trying to get into the house that I'm in now, I had a home loan through a local bank, and they erroneously reported me late on a payment, which was reported to my credit, to the credit bureau, which was going to prevent me from qualifying for the new loan for my house. This is back in 2016. So I didn't realize that. But what I did is I took them to small claims court. So here's what's interesting about small claims court. Different set of rules. Generally speaking, motions to dismiss are not allowed. Because what happens when you file a small claims case, you set a hearing with that judge at the time. And then when you serve that small claims lawsuit on the opposing party, you're letting them know, this is going to be heard before this judge at this time. And if you don't show up, you're going to get a default judgment against you. Did you guys know that? Did you know that, Erica?
No, I guess not.
I didn't realize that either. And I apologize, because here I am coming on here professing I'm some type of a expert in this matter, which, guys, I am not an expert in this matter. So please don't take what I say as gospel truth. But what's fascinating is you don't need a lot of information. You just have to be able to follow your state's rules for what constitutes a small claim. Okay. Generally speaking, it's usually any dollar amount under $10,000. Some states are different. Some are, it's like five or six. Some it's 8,000. Here in Utah, it's about 10,000. So I can sue anybody for up to $10,000 in small claims court. Anything higher than that is required to go to your typical district court. Okay. What if I just want to bring a petition for declaratory judgment?
We were just talking about this in my little study buddy group.
Do petitions for declaratory judgment seek damages? No. What we're asking the court to do is determine the rights based on the applicability of these laws, right?
So could we use the small claims courts to get a declaratory judgment?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can use, you guys, and I'm going to do a show on this probably in the next two or three shows, episodes. You can use a small claims court to demand any creditor to prove that they have a verified claim against you. Do you know what a verified claim is, Erica?
Well, it's when you certify it under penalty of perjury.
Yes, you're right on. Okay. Here is the legal definition of verification. Sorry, my stupid app. Verification, the declaration under oath or upon penalty of perjury that a statement or pleading is true.
It's true.
When you look at the federal law under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, when we get one of those stupid statements in the mail from one of these pesky debt collectors, you have a right to send them and says, hey, I demand that you document and verify or validate. It means the same thing, that what you're seeking is true. Every single time I've sent a letter, the people that respond back to me, they only send me a one-page letter. So yeah, we verified this was true. So I don't care. You didn't follow the federal law. You, sir, are in violation of the federal law. I am under no obligation to pay you anything until you do. So what we can use these small claims courts for, we can file what's called a petition for verification of debt or else release all claims. And we can get a binding judicial determination that, hey, these people are trying to take money from me. I've asked them to prove that they lent me money and they didn't lend me something that's not money. I'm just going to leave that little nugget there for you, let you guys determine what that means. Because how many times have we been led to believe, we go into, let's say you're going to buy a house, you want to go get a mortgage. How many times have you said, oh, geez, you got to qualify for this loan. We got to make sure you make enough money to repay the loan. You got to make sure you have your debt to income isn't too high. All of these things, right? You're led to believe that whoever you're applying the loan, whoever you're applying for the loan with is going to be lending you, giving you money to purchase whatever it is you're trying to purchase. So it's no different than if Erica were to come to me and say, James, I want to buy a new car. And I say, okay, I've got $20,000 in my account. How much is your car? You say 10. Wonderful. I lend you $10,000 to you. I create a new account, one where when I take payments back, it repays back that 10,000. So I had 20,000 in this bucket. It's now reduced by the 10,000 given to Erica. Now I'm replenishing that bucket, right? Simple.
Should be easy to prove.
Yeah. This is fourth grade math. How many times have you guys been guaranteed that that's what happens when you take out a loan? Never. It's because it doesn't work like that. That's not how it works. So again, I'm going to save that for another episode. I'm going to leave that little teaser there, that cliffhanger there for everybody, so we can guarantee you guys come back and listen to our clown show again. Okay.
Yeah. See, we're like really diligently working on this. Is like,
and Erica,
we're going to find some remedy.
Erica, you and I are going to talk a little bit more off the air about this, but so Diesel for We the People says Texas is 20,000. That's fantastic. I guarantee you guys, if you start taking people to small claims court for 10, 15, 20,000 a pop, you're going to get somebody's attention real quick. Even though we're not going for the home run, we're just going for a base hit. Just get on first base. Heck, don't even get a base hit. Take a walk. Take a four pitch walk and get on to first base. Then we can look to score. So, you guys, I feel like I've rambled on a lot today. There's so much going on. I do appreciate you and love you all for listening. Our faithful, those who listen all the time, C to AZ, thank you so much. I do hope, I'm looking forward to being on with the Legal Beagles. We're going to talk a lot about these things. So, Erica, any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
I'm just always going to end the same way that my spirit leads. I really think that there's room for remedy just in lovingly instructing our public servants, because they're acting as the prison guards in the same place that they're also prisoners. Mm-hmm. And they don't know the law any more than cops know the law, or that doctors know how the body actually works, or that CPAs know what an income tax is, who it's for. Every industry is plagued, but they're all filled with men and women who just don't know.
Yeah.
There are some who do and they're evil and we shall smite them. But the ones who don't know, we lovingly instruct and we make them our brothers. I was telling the story about how I went to the treasurer's office at the local county and the woman there, she was so kind. She was a Christian. She's very sweet. She was like homesteading. And she's like, I honestly never thought I'd be a tax collector. And like every word that she gave me on every question that I asked her, she almost couldn't even believe the words that were coming out of her mouth, that they should be able to charge us more because we put decks on our homes. You know, none of it just resonated with her spirit and you could see it. And that's the kind of connections that we want to make lovingly and just sit down with the people in our counties and show them, like, look at this. This is what it really says. You have to reconcile that in your heart and in your mind when you're performing your duties as our public servants to know what it is that you're acting against and who you're acting against with the people. So I don't ever want to undermine the power of making the connections with the men and women who are filling the roles of our servants.
That's great. great point. I mean, you're absolutely right. This poor, I mean, and you could tell when you had interactions with this woman at the treasurer's office that she was like, I there's something about what I am doing that feels icky.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and as a Christian woman, I'm sure she's been read the passages in the Bible where woe unto you tax collectors.
Oh yeah. She quoted it herself.
Right. So here she is like, I never in a million years thought I'd be a tax collector, yet here I am.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So, let's just continue to be diligent, people. Stand on your principles, do what is right, do unto others as you would have others do unto you, and you have nothing to fear. We will get our remedy. It may not happen soon. It may not happen within the next year or two. Heck, it might not, may never happen at all. But at least you can say, I was willing to stand up and fight. Like I'm teaching my children this. Like I had this conversation with my 17-year-old daughter the other day. We were driving. Can't remember where we were driving from somewhere, but we were in my truck driving. And she was just, this is where we had the best conversations about her rights and the law and what we do. And she's like, Dad, they're not teaching this stuff to us in schools. No. She's like, will you help me? She said to me the other day or yesterday, she said, will you help me with my earth and science and stuff? And I was like, okay, what do you get working on? Oh, we have to show about how greenhouse gases get trapped and how it's causing climate change. And I'm like, yeah, sorry, I can't help you because I don't believe in that crap. I don't. Okay. I said, you know this because we've had this discussion. I know this. I said, we are both Christians. We both believe God put us here on this planet for a reason. We both know that God would never put people on a planet where they could deliberately destroy the planet they're living on. That does not, that defies godly love. It just defies it. It defies.
Well, and love. You bring up another really good point that this starts at home.
It does.
It starts with being on the same page with your partner and intentionally teaching your children to be able to see what's coming. And what I do is I make this the most fun place in the world to be for all the kids. And then I teach them while they're here. I sneaky teach them. I even went to a fraternity house. One of my kids is a president of a fraternity. And I was like, all right, guys, let's talk about what happens when you get pulled over and they find that doobie. You know, you need to know what's going on.
Oh, so, I would love to see that. That is that one, your son, your daughter, son?
Our oldest.
Your oldest? I would love this. Hey, guys, come on over to the frat house. I'm going to have my pregnant mom come in and tell us about
I went to another college thing last week with another one of my sons, and I said, I bet you I'm going to be the only pregnant mom here. And sure enough, I was.
That's hilarious. We have this running joke here in Utah, right? Utah full of Mormons. They have lots of kids, right? It's like, oh yeah, I got married and my mom was pregnant in our line as we're shaking people's hands, right? I mean, that's anyway.
Use every opportunity to teach anyone in your sphere because education is exponential. It is. I might only teach one person, but that one person might teach five people, and those five people might teach 20 people. And that's what it's going to take to start having remedy is waking up people to even realize that this is even a thing. What? We don't have, we're not taxpayers. What?
Wait a minute.
Crazy person.
I don't have to pay taxes. Yeah. I had this discussion with a friend of mine who's considering leaving the state because he got hammered on taxes. And I'm like, dude, we got to talk. We got to talk. All right, you guys, with that, we're coming at an hour and 20 minutes. Thank you so much for everybody for tuning in. All of our faithful, Alexis, I'm glad you're here. Bill, Jar, I know you said you missed it. Don't worry. As you know, this is uploaded to YouTube and to all the popular podcasting platforms. You can listen to us there, C to AZ and Diesel for We the People. Thank you guys for being here. Look forward to doing another show again. And yes, I will put in the Telegram channel when I am on with the Legal Beagles. I'm looking forward to that. It should be fun. And if there's anything else that comes up, I believe that Sean from the SGT report has asked me to be on his show again. So we'll see what we can talk about there. So with that, you guys, I'm going to sign us off. Thank you so much. God bless you all. Have a wonderful weekend. And until next time, we'll see you guys then. Take care, everyone.
All right, bye, guys.